And welcome. It's Saturday morning and in the middle of December. Welcome to the quarterly KPCW Friday Film Review panel, where we get our at least three of our selected film review experts here and what kind of talk about what's going on. We have starting over at the other end of the room, we have Martha Mann Harrington.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we have Linda Jager, or Chamber Linda.
Well, you still haven't, you haven't come up with a nickname for me yet.
Chamber Linda is the.
Good morning.
That's in the middle of the Sundance season. Your job is to take phone calls from people who went to the Sundance Festival last year and said, "I drove to Provo Canyon. There wasn't a damn person showing movies anywhere."
No, we're pretty excited.
They got to explain, that Sundance is not at Sundance. And and Jill Orschel, the big J-O, a film buff and distinguished documentary filmmaker.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. Welcome, everybody. A lot of stuff to talk about, but in the last week or so, the Sundance Film Festival released the lineup of the films, which are in a great many programs, ranging from dramatic competition to midnight stuff to some panels that may draw like huge Super Bowl-like crowds. to start with, let's start with Jill. What, for just looking at the Sundance stuff, get your mojo going?
Oh man, the hot seat. I'm up first. I actually came here not to be the. I'm here to respond to all of you guys. Actually, looking through some of the press releases, there's a couple things that stuck out in my mind. And as everybody is kind of preparing for Sundance and want to be a part of it, they're still doing the individual ticket registration, right, for Sundance. So although it seems really confusing, people can still register, and it actually takes minutes.
I believe that's correct. Anybody who knows different, just chime in. But I believe that's still taking place.
Yeah, I've had a little trouble signing on. I don't know if anybody else has, but I kind of get halfway through the process and start all over again. So maybe you can walk me through it.
Well, exactly. Well, it's always worth it, because then you can get into some of these fun films. But rather than just specific films, I think programs are what really stick in my mind that to concentrate on, like the Spotlight. Spotlight's like this section in Sundance that Sundance programmers love that are playing at different festivals. And they're usually like films that are easier to get into. And then, of course, the Park City at Midnight. There's nothing like seeing a Park City at Midnight movie. Like, it is the strangest thing, and you kind of go in and out of sleeping and wake up at about, maybe 3 a.m. And then, of course, the next program is really exciting. And festival director John Cooper was talking about these films that are in next are films that could be in the competition, but the competition films couldn't be in the next. It's all about that really distinctive and daring voice. And one title that came out that stuck in my mind was Nasty Baby, about a gay couple trying to have a baby. And then Christmas Again, I thought it was an interesting little story about the self-destructive Christmas tree salesman. So it's kind of like the, what's the TV show that I haven't seen yet? That everybody's seen over and over again, right?
Breaking Bad.
I think it's the
Breaking Bad at a Christmas tree lot or something.
Something like that.
And the interesting coincidence is that you get maybe two or more pictures with the same theme, and the next program alone has two Christmas movies. The one that Jill just mentioned. There's one called Tangerine, which is described as, quote, "A working girl tears through Tinseltown on Christmas Eve, searching for the pimp who broke her heart. So I don't know what this thing about dark Christmas movies is going on here, but.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think the whole theme, what is merging for Sundance this year, is really dark and really intense. Mm. So, man, I mean, we've already seen that. So there's more to come. We're in trouble.
Uh-oh. Well, in the spirit of going boy, girl, boy, girl, Mark, what's interesting to you in the press room?
Well, I think that's right. I think part of the program has gone really dark, and I think the Midnight series will be especially scary this year. And you've got another film, I can't remember if it's dramatic or next, but Witch, which is also by all accounts a New England horror story that's going to set you back in the fear circle. So those are all going to be super fun. But I think there has been a little bit of a progression in the last couple of film festivals to go to lighter fare on the other end, premieres and dramatic. You know, you have those years of self-loathing and the characters that you just, you know, you want to beat up rather than watch. And the past couple of years, you've seen that shift a little. And I think you're seeing that again, particularly with a number of comedians playing both comedic roles and shifting into some crossover dramatic. Jack Black, Sarah Silverman, Kristen Wiig back with two films. And I think all those films are films to watch. And then you got Bobcat Goldthwait with his own film, Call Me Lucky, and so that should be pretty interesting as well, as he puts on the director's hat. So
yeah, which is a documentary. Yeah. Which he's done some narrative films at Sundance before.
Yeah, super talented guy, and I think giving you a different perspective of the you know, a comedian coming through, you know, Hard Knocks life to then take on a sort of activist career. And sort of a biopic there. And I think there's a number of biopics like that are just, you know, not the name recognition with a lot of the focus isn't there, but the stories are going to be really interesting, I think, as always. And the whole, I always gravitate to the documentaries, and that slate in particular, both Premiere and in the U.S. slate, just seem, you know, I don't see where you can go wrong, quite frankly, in any of the choices.
And Linda, what's popped out at you?
Actually, well, I'm a big doc fan, and so I always look to that announcement first. But I've seen a lot of Utah pop up in films, and quite a few in the doc category this year. Beaver Trilogy Part 4 with Trent Harris's famous trilogy, and sort of looking back at that. So I'm looking forward to taking a look at that. Prophet's Prey, about Warren Jeffs and what's been happening down in that part of the state. In Football We Trust is going to be really interesting. It's a documentary. It's made by some filmmakers from Highland High School down in Salt Lake City, about some fellow football athletes from the Pacific Islander community and sort of their journey through sport and where it's taking them and some of the challenges they face growing up here. I'm also super excited about the Kurt Cobain documentary, Montage of Heck. I'm sure we'll see a lot of Nirvana fans and hopefully some members of the band, and Courtney Love will probably show up. And Frances Bean actually produced the documentary, his daughter. So I think it's going to be really interesting. And then Kirby Dick's The Hunting Ground about rape on college campuses. It couldn't be more timely, so I think that's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, kind of a follow-up to the film he did about 2 or 3 years ago on a similar issue in the military.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I should clarify that for those who don't have a background on Trent Harris, the Beaver Trilogy is about a young man from Beaver, Utah, just so you don't get the wrong idea.
Yeah. It's interesting. So yeah. You want to give us? I was just kind of doing a little background on it. Well, so the original, Trent was a cameraman for KUTV back in the 70s.
Yeah, and we should get Larry Warren in the
Yeah, here, was down in, yeah. was down no, testing. He's out in the parking lot, I guess, testing out a new camera, and came across this gentleman. I forget his name again.
What did they call
Trent Harris.
The Beaver character. Beaver. Yeah.
The Beaver Utah kid.
Yeah, Gunn and Gary or something. And he came just this really vivacious guy in the parking lot from Beaver, and he was interesting. And so he did this doc about him. And then I think number two was Sean Penn playing that character, so a little transition. And then the third, I can't remember the actor that picked up the third part of the trilogy. So
Crispin Glover.
Yeah, Crispin Glover. So really interesting. I'm excited to dive in a little.
Part of the trilogy is, I know Trent Harris did this thing with Crispin Glover in Dread as Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah, and that's what the original Gary was an impressionist. He said, "I'm the rich little of Beaver, Utah," and talked about how he loved to do impressions of Olivia Newton-John. So I think that transitioned throughout the series.
Yeah, and Trent Harris, he is turning into this, you know, Utah icon. He just has this, like, offbeat, you know, that Crispin Glover, Karen Black has been in a lot of his films. And he's really has this incredible, you know, unique voice. And he's, you know, from Utah.
Right, yeah. Trent also did in the 90s, he did a picture called Reuben and Ed, which is a twisted buddy movie with Glover and Howard Hessman in wandering through, you know, the parched southern Utah, and then Plan 10 from Outer Space. Mm-hmm. So a lot of interesting stuff coming up. We'll get back a little bit in a second and talk a little bit more about Sundance and then plunge on to other topics.
Hi, this is Cindy Kaiser. I want to take this opportunity to thank all of our loyal supporters throughout the year. There's still time to support local journalism. Make your tax-deductible gift online at kpcw.org or call me at 649-9004. Thank you and wishing you the best this holiday season.
Park City Storage proudly stores the stuff of KPCW, offering climate-controlled storage units with covered loading areas, packing and moving supplies, and use of a rental truck. Storage sizes accommodate storing a car, boat, furniture, or just stuff, located in the Silver Creek Business Park, 645-7900 or parkcitystorage.com.
This is Chandler Montgomery, a KPCW volunteer, wishing you a very happy holiday and new year.
I want to wash my hands, my face and hair with snow.
Snow, I long to clear a path and lift a spade of snow.
Jill, would you like to join Bing and Rosemary Clooney?
Let's all go. Snow.
Yes. We're trying to goose the weather a little bit to give us, you know, a little something, because that's from White Christmas, of course. But the way we're it was supposed to be snowing this morning, I think. But
I think around 11.
Oh, it's
11? That's what I heard.
It's going to start. Just about when we get done, huh? Is that...
I mean, can you believe we woke up and it was like less than a skiff?
But there's more on the hill. Yeah. The hill got a little more.
Yeah, because that's the chamber optimist.
Exactly. It's snowing here in Utah, everyone.
No doubt, it's going to be a great year.
Yeah.
And buy a beer for your local snowmaker every day.
Yes.
Yeah. Otherwise, the lyrics are, "I'm licking the sidewalk out of desperation because we have no snow."
The heroes of the town this time of year.
Yeah.
Hug a snowmaker.
If you lick a sidewalk, does it stick?
Yeah. Only the new fancy granite ones.
Yeah. I've never did. Yeah, did. How many people? Yeah, actually tried that Christmas story thing about sticking your tongue to a frozen pipe or something, you know. Poor kids, you know, have their tongue stuck to, you know, the metal, and just somebody said, "I double dog dare you."
Rick, I double dog dare you to that post right outside the KPCW studios. Wouldn't that be a great publicity stunt for Rick Bruff, the famous?
Yeah, I don't have time for a 911 call today. I'm sorry. Thank you. Before we leave Sundance, just a couple of things. You know, it's funny how some Sundance years, I guess the programmers say it's coincidence, but that they get two or three films with the same star. I think we got a couple with Kristen Wiig. And we talked about the two dark Christmas movies, and then in separate programs there are two films about social experiments. One is called The Experimenter, and the other one The Stanford Prison Experiment, and they're both based on true stories about these kind of creepy social experiments that were carried out by sociologists. It's like one of those things where they tell the test subject to give somebody else an electric shock. Or
well, they're really, Trevor Groth, director of programming, mentioned that there's so many taboo subjects, and then these filmmakers are depicting them with empathy. And there's human beings doing things you could not have imagined on film. It's just so interesting that is the merging theme coming out of, this year. What's happening to the world?
Yeah, Mark?
No, I mean, I agree completely. And it is always amazing how the lineup does reflect current events, and whether it be the films about college rape, to the race relation films, there's always seems to be the programmers have to be congratulated in sort of both being spot on in terms of the relevance, but also the timing of some of the stories that they decide to share. And don't forget, I think one of the most frustrating parts for newer audiences that come into Sundance for the first time is they expect, because of the stature of the festival, high quality like first and then story, they don't appreciate that a lot of these films are selected because of the unique voice and the storytelling, not necessarily the production value or what will be generally accepted by the masses. It's just the opposite. And so, you do need a higher tolerance level to hear these viewpoints, and some of them aren't following the mainstream media dialogue that we're getting on these topics, and that's the whole point. So indulge. Yeah,
exactly. I think that, as you said before, people coming to Sundance for the first time may be coming, looking at the premieres and celebrities and so forth. But really, where else are you going to see all this variety of film in one place? And so I really encourage people to, sort of get outside the box and try something new, jump on a waitlist line for something you may not have picked out.
And the locals registration is still available till the 15th, Monday. So
great.
You can sundance.org and click on locals, and you need to log in. But once you get through it, it is actually, fairly easy. Once you get the first time is a little tricky, but get in there, because that's a big advantage. It's going to be much harder this year to get individual tickets after the packages and the Utah locals selections are gone.
Yeah, that's always worth it to register. Yeah.
Speaking of films that are kind of timely, and with the announcement of the Kirby Ditt documentary came out the same week that there were arguments back and forth about the credibility of Rolling Stone's story about the gang rape at U of E.
Yeah,
and
who could have predicted that?
That'd be a really interesting FAQ or Q&A after the film. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And also in the documentary competition, I believe there's a violent conflict between a white and black film called 3.5 Minutes, which is not about a white cop and a black teenager, but it's about a white middle-aged software developer, and there was wasn't exactly road rage, it was kind of gas station rage, this confrontation at a gas station about the group of kids that the guy thought were playing their music too loud, and ended up with a black teenager being shot. So that one is also likely going to provoke a lot of discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that we increasingly see at Sundance is just this excellence of cinema and storytelling. And especially in the documentary world, there's this, it's considered kind of like the golden age of documentary filmmaking right now, because there not only are important topics being discussed, but they're being told in really entertaining, engaging, compelling ways with a narrative arc that is very much like a fiction film. And I think that's so exciting.
Yeah, and the And somebody mentioned the Q&As, which is, you know, if you have the time and you don't have to run off to another movie, you know, stick around for the Q&As, because those can be, I mean, somebody mentioned the midnight shows. There's a few midnight shows where the Q&As were more fun than the movie.
Yeah, but don't be that guy or that woman that doesn't ask a question. It's called question and answer, not... We want to hear your thoughts and praise for the filmmaker and see how smart you are and what you agree with what they said. It's a question. Ask the question. Sit down.
Good point.
That's March training from public input at City Council. You were making. Was there a question in that speech someplace?
Do you notice there's always somebody close by, kind of moderating now a little bit more?
Gotten a little better, but we still have a very high threshold of tolerance for the self-promoting question person.
And there are usually a few of the standards. You know, what was the budget? What'd you shoot on?
And yeah. And they, of course, you know, they don't want to say, because it affects so much they can sell the picture for. A couple of interesting, you know, panels being announced. One was the woman in film, which we'll have. It was announced that we'll have Lena Dunham, Kristen Wiig, and Mindy Kaling, and a few other ladies who are not those people.
I can't wait to see that panel. I'm going to make sure I get into that one. I will pay and wait in line. It's going to be fantastic.
And the one that I think. I'm curious to see what venue they booked for this, because it's a panel about, I think, story and film or something. Robert Redford with George Lucas, and the moderator is Leonard Maltin.
Oh.
Where could you put that in
Park City? I bet that might be at the Eccles.
Yeah, Eccles. Eccles
be that'll be the first Eccles panel.
It's got to be in the Eccles.
Yeah.
They could pat 1,300 people in for that one.
Aren't they live streaming a few panels as well? They might be doing a few.
I think they said that one would be live streamed, but it would still be awesome just to be
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. To be in the room.
To see those.
It's actually
the two of the icons of different visions of Hollywood. And Lucas, one of the fathers of the blockbuster, with Redford, the father of the message movie, the indie movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Linda, you made a good point of being able to see it online. You know, of course, seeing it live is always special. But that seems to be a trend, you know, for not only Sundance, but a lot of the major film festivals. They're putting some of their programming online. You know, you really don't have to. You can really experience it on your computer.
Yeah, and you have a lot more options, you know, even real time during the festival, particularly in the short program where you can, you know, you can see a lot of the program online without having to go to the theater. But some of us prefer the big screen.
Yeah, for
it
sure.
It is, if you're here and you can take advantage of it.
And I have this vision because, as it happens, the promoters of Comic-Con, I think, have one of their events on, like, the last weekend of Sundance. So this meeting between Redford and Lucas, do you suppose if Comic-Con might do some organization, you know, in collaboration with Sundance? So when they line up for the questions, you got the guy with the goatee and the beret. And
that could make Main Street a lot more interesting during Sundance as well, if you add in the Comic-Con.
You know, the typical Sundance guy, behind him is somebody dressed like a hobbit.
Yeah.
Mr. Lucas, did Han fire first or did Greedo fire first? Could we get that settled finally?
Somehow that, you know, we have to use the word juxtaposition, right?
Nice,
when on a film panel. But Lucas and Redford, that kind of brings to mind Star Wars and Disney. Shopping for my nieces and nephews and my kids and stuff, I'm seeing Star Wars stuff everywhere, you know, with a little Disney. And little yoga ornaments.
Saw a Star Wars. I was shopping for ugly sweaters, ugly Christmas sweaters, and I saw a Star Wars ugly Christmas sweater. So all in one. There you go.
Well, you can't just blame Disney. The very first installment of the franchise was the kind of transforming film to co-market and pre-release marketing prior to the premiere of the film. Mm-hmm. And that is what propelled it initially. And so, sure, Disney's going to get on the bandwagon. The bottom line is, how's the trailer look? The trailer looks phenomenal. It looks like it's back to the original kind of look and feel. And obviously you got the cast returning. So I think there's a lot of anticipation, and it's going to, buy your Disney stock now.
Linda Jill, you guys seen the trailer?
I haven't yet. I have not yet.
I can't believe it, no. But I have got the Yoda ornament and the Darth Vader sweater.
You do get it.
We'll pull it up for the next sound. We'll overlap it with your next, holiday music that nobody wants to hear.
I'm just curious, how many festivals have you all been to? I mean, we've got four locals here. Rick, how many festivals have you been to? Sundance. How many years?
All of them. Of course, I was fortunate enough to be around when. Before the festival was even called Sundance, when they told the U.S., Utah, or the Utah U.S., they never did. I think they didn't quite figure out what that was. But and then they called 85, the Sundance Institute took it over, and after a few years, it was called Sundance, which again leads people to drive to Provo Canyon, as I said before. It's been interesting watching the evolution. I wish it's grown to the size, of course. I mean, am I the only one that gets frustrated that you can't, see everything?
You're not the only one.
Wouldn't it be nice to Xerox yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe like Michael Keaton in Multiplicity, only you do it right this time. And you send five of you
around. Or have a Groundhog Day where you just can do it over each day a different way.
That'd be good.
Yeah. I always say, you got to watch, you got to kind of pick a theme or just a grouping. Like for me, I love the doc films and the world films. Just like, you did for the Olympics. You don't know where to go or with buttons. So you just kind of choose a theme. And we chose mascot pins.
Uh-huh. That's true. This is my 15th year. And I moved here right in December in 2000. And it was, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. That's here in Park City. And right away. And just seeing the change. And, I used to jump on the line for local tickets and wait 24 hours and hang out inside the Gateway Center with most of Park City. And it has changed. It's been really interesting to see the change.
Yeah.
How about you, Jill? How many festivals are you
to? We moved here in 90 and I volunteered with a festival, and it was the year after Sex, Lies, and Videotape played, which was like the turning point for independent filmmaking.
Yes.
And I remember I was like the button maker. Speaking of buttons, I did a little calligraphy, Steven Soderbergh's button. And then, years went by doing volunteer work and then photography with them. And I finally had a short film that made it a few years ago. And so it's been fun to see the evolution, with the festival and myself.
How about you, Mark? How many?
I'm going about 25 years. I think I went to my first screening before I lived here, visiting in the late 80s. I want to say 88. And then I came back the following year as well. With my college girlfriend, and we decided to move here. Summers 90 right after that, but always came back for the next 3 years during the winter until I moved here in 1994 permanently. Yeah.
Mark, does any memory stick out of being in the theater when some classic was discovered at Sundance, or conversely, you were there and something laid a large, smelly pile of.
Well, the first one's certainly easier. Immediately jumping out is Emma Russum's break into song at the premiere of Songcatcher in the library. That was just an iconic moment, and it was the launching point of what has become an outstanding career. And obviously still I'm a big fan of her transformation in the cable series with, the name jumped out of my head.
The Newsroom.
Not Newsroom, Chicago, where she's the lead sister.
Boardwalk Empire?
No. Oh, we're all brain dead this morning.
Someone can call me to piss off.
Anyway, it'll come in 2 seconds.
And she and Emma went to the leading lady in Phantom of the Opera.
Right. Worst experience, you know, any number of bad vampire films that probably should have never, you know. That's when I say, oh, really? I mean, what voice were you trying to give an audience to here? I mean, there's been some that I've just been, oh, my God. And it is high risk at night. Although, you know, I will agree with Jill, the production values skyrocketed, and in that Midnight series in particular, those used to be, you know, much more campy and, you know, risk of B-rated, you know, B-type films. And now you've got, you know, I think Keanu Reeves and Kevin Bacon in one and some really good horror films this year. So I would echo,
yeah, and the,
give despite the risk, give the Midnight series a chance.
Yes, and there's a horror documentary, which is a little unusual, but I think it's something about examining the problem of sleep paralysis, which I'm not quite sure what that is, but that promises to be interesting.
Sounds frightening. Can I just say, right on cue, the snow is falling. Yay!
Snow. You know, I think one of my most exciting Sundance moments was watching El Mariachi with Robert Rodriguez, and then the Q&A was even better than the film, where he was up there just telling the audience, "You can do this. I've done it for made this movie for $7,000, and I sold blood. I stayed at this hospital and gave my blood for a year, and that's how I raised funds."
Yes. And Shameless was the name of the series.
Oh, good. Got it.
Shameless, okay.
And I actually, I was at U2's documentary, and they were there. That was so cool just to see everybody on stage. And actually, poignantly, One Hour Photo several years ago with Robin Williams, and he came up and just did his stand-up throughout the Q&A. It was really, really interesting. And it was a really dark movie, but to balance it with laughter with Robin, it was great.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe if we have time, we can get to that a little bit later. But I think we're about to segue out of here as we watch the little snowflakes falling outside our weather window, and keep it coming.
To see a great big man entirely made of snow.
Emmy award-winning actress, comedian, and singer Jane Lynch delivers a side-splitting, anti-cabaret show New Year's Eve at the Eccles Center. Unconventional, uproarious, thoroughly entertaining, The Evening with Jane Lynch starts at 8 p.m. Tickets start at $40. Call 655-3114. Here's to a new year filled with laughter and song. Brought to you by the not-for-profit Park City Institute, entertaining, educating, and illuminating since 1998, and a KPCW supporter.
Hi, this is Jeff Lifgren of Canyons Resort Ski and Snowboard School and proud supporter of KPCW. Canyons group and private lessons are designed to build confidence, improve skills, and enjoy the mountain. More information on these classes, as well as Wednesday and Saturday First Tracks, and our locals program at canyonsresort.com.
Happy holidays from KPCW and Shireen Short Show. May you get what you want and not what you deserve for the holiday season.
Okay, we're back to the Friday Film Review panel. We're trying to encourage the snow a little bit. Oh, it's tapered off a bit, but since we're talking about dark movies and snow, I was trying to throw in a little music from Fargo to sort of get us in a Sundance mood and hopefully get the weather gods out there in a snow mood.
Well, here's your trivia question, and Rick can't answer. What film was filmed in Park City because it had more snow than the original European location?
Oh, I should know that one.
That was based on a Christmas-themed war film.
Oh. Good one.
Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue.
No. It starred Gary Sinise.
Oh, I think I know this, yes. But I'll...
What year?
Todd Dylan, 1992?
Early 90s, yeah.
Before my Park City times.
Okay, directed by the actor who drove Christine.
Was it shot over when it used to be called the Winter School?
Close to that area.
Close. Mm-hmm. It was filmed, I think, mostly up in Empire. the high school and a little bit in Ogden. A Midnight Clear.
Oh,
yes.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
a Midnight.
Yeah.
Yes, the setting was the Battle of the Bulge, and
right.
the Ardennes Forest was White Pine Canyon. which explains the tank was driving up the road, and the story involved the soldiers holing up in this French chateau, and so for the interiors of the chateau, they filmed inside the Carl Winter School, kind of an interim condition at the time.
Right.
Hadn't been turned yet into the library. So they filmed the inside stuff there, and a lot of exteriors around White Pine and I guess other locales, Mark. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. They did some of the other war shots. I guess they filmed up in Ogden, and so it was a really good, you know, one of the bigger success stories for the Utah film development folks here in Utah. And mm-hmm, so hopefully something we can replicate out in the Cube someday. Otherwise, we'll just turn it into the four-way drive-in movie theater. We'll just project film on the white surface.
The iceberg. Fargo was got its share of kudos way back there in 96, I think, and Frances McDormand, the mm-hmm. classic performance mm-hmm. as Chief Marge. And so of the films that we're looking at this year, what's possible Oscar bait or what is at least you would hope would get some Oscars? Linda?
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of them are being released now or in limited release. So you see a few out there, and I haven't had a chance to catch them yet, but I loved to see Grand Budapest Hotel, you know, sort of get the nods and Golden Globes. I love that. I love quirky films, and that was great. So I'd love mm-hmm. to see that kind of carry through.
Fading fast.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you're spot on. This is the worst year for late release. I mean, we're 2 weeks away from the end of the year, and almost half the films still aren't accessible to the public in films, but in the reason why they do it is because they don't want to suffer that fate. You know,
yep,
that film is fading fast, and it probably isn't, you know, I don't think it's going to make it.
Oh, peaking too soon. Let's see. Well, we have had a theory of everything is out, and there's a few that have, I don't know if they...
That's here in town, so definitely want to catch that one. And Foxcatcher, I've been keeping my eye out for. I mean, that looks like it's going to be amazing. And Steve Carell in that role, and... it hasn't hit Utah yet. So.
Yeah, no, he's definitely going to be propelled to the front runner in that. Especially when you don't have the iconic front runners in those big dramatic films, I think the voters tend to gravitate towards those transformative roles, and you will not recognize him in that role. And it's, by all accounts, outstanding performance.
If only for the nose job. And Mark, what have you seen that you're boosting, or what are you anxious to see?
I'm anxious to see Unbroken, Angelina Jolie's directed film. Fascinating story, complex film, and by all accounts going to be a big hitter. American Sniper, I love sniper films. And anxious to see what Clint Eastwood is going to do with that one. I think Whiplash could be a slow burn kind of dark horse there. I think that will gain momentum over the holiday period. And Imitation Game, I think, as Rick will probably get to with one of our bonus questions a little bit, but I think the story, you know, the British story of what's his name, the decoder spy.
Alan Turing.
Alan Turing. And so, those films tend to get a lot of attention by voters late, so, you know.
And St. Vincent's been brought up, and you reviewed that film, didn't you?
That was a big surprise. Yeah. I think you'll see a lot of nominations for the cast. I don't think it'll rise to the level of Best Picture or Best Director, but I think you'll see a couple of the cast gets either supporting nominations, and you know, Bill might eke out a Best Performance nomination on that. I certainly don't think he'll win, but he may get recognized. Any number of the other cast will probably get supporting.
And Gone Girl, it's been mentioned, I know, in the Globes. And mm-hmm. what do y'all think about that one?
Yeah. Well, certainly, had a lot of attention paid to it. And Rosamund Pike, I think, got a nomination. And having seen Birdman, I'd at least rooting for Michael Keaton to get a nod. And J.K. Simmons and Whiplash, if only because, you know, I just like the idea of, you know, the guy from the Farmers Insurance commercial getting nominated for an Oscar.
Well, I think still on my viewing list to see is Boyhood.
Oh, yeah.
I missed it at the film series. I was out of town, but it's still available to see probably down in Salt Lake. That was 12 years in the making by Richard Linklater, and that's definitely a hopeful for the Oscar.
Yeah, clearly the front runner for Best Director. I think this is one of those years you may see the split, Best Director, Best Film, and he's definitely the one to beat for that, because he's just, industry loves to reward that effort, and it is a great,
absolutely.
It is a great film.
Yeah, like a huge technical scope, but very, very intimate in the story. The film that was the most exciting of the year to me was Birdman. Just layered storytelling and just really technically ambitious, and the soundtrack was just super. Michael Keaton, of course, is great, but I think Edward Norton is going to take away Best Supporting Actor.
Hmm.
You heard it here.
or you just can't get the image of him and the Speedo fighting with Michael Keaton out of your mind. Is that it?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And also, well, two films by women, you know, like there's also this really growing movement of, you know, women in filmmaking, and Angelina Jolie not getting a Golden Globe nomination for Unbroken. I don't know. You know, it's so funny why that is going on in our modern time. But I saw Angelina Jolie in her high heels and those big, beautiful lips, you know, and I remember just thinking, oh, man, she's directing too. You know, it's like even I, you know, had that, you know, kind of double standard for women. It's interesting, really interesting. So it's a lot of discussion. But anyways, Unbroken will be really interesting to see. I think I just want to just go for it in support of her. And also another film, Wild.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be great.
Renee Witherspoon is getting some great, I think she got a Golden Globe nomination.
That's another one out in limited release, but I'm sure that'll pop up pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah. And Laura Dern getting a lot of acclaim
in that one,
too.
Yeah.
So.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And speaking of the idea of finding common themes, I'm interested to see there are at least three of the major films that have kind of the same basic premise, which is the idea of some kind of brilliant, talented person who is struck by calamity and what happens to them when this misfortune befalls them. And you could, that's basically the plot of Imitation Game, of Theory of Everything, and Unbroken. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of interesting to see which one turns out to be stronger Oscar bait, although, like Mart said, Unbroken, it seems like it hasn't peaked soon enough or something. Right now it's not showing very much strength.
Well, it definitely hurt it with Golden Globes, because, you know, that tends to be a little more influenced by, you know, press and populist than some of the other awards. So, you know, whether that carries forward or not, we'll see.
Yeah, it was snubbed.
Yeah.
The Globes, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Unless we get the flashcard, but maybe get into a little bit what we might be in the mood to see for Christmas season. And we got Entertainment Weekly, for instance, put the Into the Woods on the front.
I am trying to get my kids to not open presents on Christmas and us all go as a family to Into the Woods.
That's good. That'll be fun.
I think they'll go for that one.
Yeah. No candy for you, but here's Meryl Streep.
Oh, that's the classic line from Stru. And I'm not sure how I feel about Black Annie. It's like I think Cheech and Chong.
There was a really fun Saturday Night Live skit on that a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't pronounce her name.
Clonzine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a girl from the Sundance movie.
Beasts of the Southern Wild.
She's amazing.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, but the trailer does not look that good.
And the trailer. Exodus may be a good picture, but the trailer does not want to make me want to. It looks like Christian Bale just, you know, screaming at people. Follow me into the desert. Don't worry about the lake. I'll take care of it.
Well, with Christmas, I was at Target from 5 p.m. till closing, which is 11 o'clock. Isn't that crazy?
I hope you have Starbucks in your hand.
A full cart. I abandoned it twice. But in that cart, and I end up buying, was A Christmas Story. That's a great one. But geez, last night, went on demand and found Little Women. And it's its 20th anniversary this year, with Winona Ryder, Kirsten Dunst did I pronounce that right?
That's right.
Yeah, a young Kirsten Dunst just this brilliant performance by her, and then a haunting performance by Claire Danes. And the filmmaking, the cinematography is just so fresh. It was like, made today. And, it was just so layered and beautiful, and of course it's a beloved book. So A Christmas Story I might give away, and I want to see Little Women a couple more times.
That's a wonderful equal to the Hepburn version, maybe a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Christmas Story is part of our tradition. Mm-hmm. Just hanging around in the house and watching it in PJs and laughing. I mean, that's one I can watch over and over again. But White Christmas is my favorite. I know we've been playing tunes from that.
La 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 la.
It's awesome.
And where the flipping did the snow go?
It's coming back. It's still there.
The sun is back.
It's still there. It's coming.
Mark, is there any Christmas tradition for you, a movie or a TV show?
Well, I do love the classics, but I think, you do run the risk of kind of like the music overdoing them. So I tend to gravitate to some of the bad Christmas themes. The Sundance film in Bruges, has grown upon me over the years in terms of really fun, dark comedy centered around hitmen in Christmas. And then, of course, Bad Santa. Billy Bob, outstanding. I mean, second only to probably Dan Aykroyd's, Santa in Trading Places. the romantic side of me loves films like Love Actually.
Yes,
Love really
Actually's
complete
awesome.
Film, and just seeing, and you get best of both worlds there because you get Bill Nye, making fun of himself as the ex-rocker, doing that sort of Billy Bob type role, so that it's just really fun film.
And Nicolas Cage and Family Man. Have you guys seen that one? That's a worthwhile one. Yeah. The Park City Film Series has a couple Christmas things coming up. The Muppet movie with Michael Caine.
Yeah.
They're playing that.
There's some fun songs in that.
Yeah.
We should have saved that one for the Christmas show, too.
But this Thursday, they're also showing something called The Starfish Throwers that is all about, hope in the world. And, that might be a nice family gathering.
Yeah. And, of course, the picture I always pitch in terms of an offbeat Christmas movie is the one I always promote is called We're No Angels. I don't know if any, believe it or not, a Humphrey Bogart Christmas movie.
Ooh.
Which was Humphrey Bogart, Peter Ustinov, and Aldo Ray are three convicts who escape from Devil's Island, and their plot is to rob this little shop in the port and escape on a ship, and they're gonna. They say, we'll rob these guys and kill them if we have to. But the proprietor is this hapless character, kind of a Bob Cratchit type, Leo G. Carroll, and his cruel, nasty cousin is about to come and foreclose on him and throw him out into the street. And so the convicts, instead of robbing them, become their angels and cure all their problems. So it's part Christmas story, and it's there's a bit of kind of arsenic and old lace stage convention, because one of the convicts in a little basket carries his pet snake named Adolf. who is never seen, but when the bad guys are Adolf, you know, jumps out of the basket and bites the bad guys and they die off stage.
It sounds like classic film noir.
Yeah.
How could we see that?
I suspect it is on Netflix. Maybe keep an eye on TCM. Maybe they'll show it.
Or maybe jump down to the Tower Theater. You know, they've got an extensive library of DVD classics. So if you're in Salt Lake, pop over there.
So the sight of Bogart, Peter Ustinov, and Aldo Ray singing A Christmas Carol to this family, that's worth the price of admission right there.
Mm. What's it called again?
We're No Angels, not to be confused with the lame movie they did with De Niro and Sean Penn in the 90s. Stay away from that one. But I think if you go to count one, and I think we can exit on that with Bing. And thanks very much to Mark Harrington and Linda Jager and Jill Orschel for being here with the Christmas Oscar Sundance panel of the year.
Thanks. It's been so fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Happy holidays.
Have a good weekend.
When I'm worried and I can't sleep, I count my blessings instead of sheep. I fall asleep counting my blessings.